Good evening. Welcome to Next Level Church. My name is Rob Shepherd, and I'm the lead pastor at Next Level. And tonight, we are concluding our series entitled, You Can't Say That. And if this is your first time with us, you need to know over the last few weeks, we've been tackling some tough stuff that you find in the Bible, some tough questions that a lot of people that don't go to church are asking about God, but for some reason, the people inside the church aren't asking. And so we try to tackle these questions. We try to tackle them with humility and get some understanding to them. And that's led to tonight. Tonight, we are doing a live Q&A. And here's what that means. There's a number on the screen, and you can text in any question. And when I say any question, I mean any question. There is nothing off limits. There is nothing too awkward. You text it in, and we're going to throw up the questions on the screen. They are anonymous. We won't know who asked the questions, and we did that on purpose because we want you to ask real questions. We want you to ask hard questions, and I'll do the best I can to answer them. I want you to know that because you are texting in these questions, I'm not prepared for this, so I don't know what you're going to ask, so I may not know all the answers. I may stumble through an answer. My face might turn red during an answer, but that's all part of the fun of doing a live Q&A. And so as you guys are starting to text in your questions to that number on the screen, I did want to just highlight one thing about our church that I am just incredibly thankful for. Each month, we try to pick a local or global organization that we can partner with to make a difference in the world. And for us, this is a really big deal because we don't want to be a church that is just about us as insiders and those that go to church. We want to be a church that reaches out into the community, that gets our hands dirty, and makes a difference in Jesus' name. And so each month, we try to do something that's out there. And for the month of November, we delivered some meals, some Thanksgiving meals. But this was really important for our church because we've adopted a school called Jenkins, which is in Newport News, and it gets a lot of its students, the majority of its students, from one specific neighborhood. And our goal is not just to have a one-time touch with something in the world or the community, but to have multiple touches, to do multiple things that would impact this school so that they could say, hey, we are different because of the love of this church. And the school let us know that there were up to 20 families who did not have enough money to provide a Thanksgiving meal. And so you guys, over the month of November, brought in food, donated food, and then a lot of you delivered the food. And I heard some incredible stories. I heard people going above and beyond, actually calling and saying, hey, what else do you need? And delivering clothes and getting to know the people they delivered it to. And that made me so proud to be your pastor, because that really is a huge part of what we do. We don't want to be a church that just comes and sits and soaks. We want to be a church that makes a difference because Jesus has made a difference in us. And so I just wanted to say thank you guys. I'm incredibly proud of us as a church for what we did last month. And yeah, you can clap for that. That's cool. I'll let you clap for that. All right, so with that being said, hopefully that gave enough time to get some questions in there. And I'm trying to look for a signal to see if we're good. All right, let's go with our first question. Since Adam and Eve were the first humans ever created, does that mean every human being descended from them, or were other created as well? That's an amazing question. Traditionally, it's my understanding that people believe that all of us came from Adam and Eve, that they were the first, and that we've all descended from them. But if you read through the text, there are lots of things that make you scratch your head and just wonder, how can that be possible? I like to fall under the traditional thinking of things, but then I'll read the story of creation, and all of a sudden, Adam and Eve's sons are marrying women that we haven't heard were birthed from Adam and Eve. Where'd these women come from? I don't know. Were there other Adam and Eves that God created after Adam and Eve? I don't know. Did they marry their sisters? That's gag nasty. I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know for sure. But when you read through the text, there is a lot of sense that says, yeah, I think we descended from Adam and Eve. I think they were the first, and then they populated the earth. But there's a little bit of like, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. And here's the thing that I love about that question. I love whoever asked that question. There are lots of things about the Bible that at the end of the day, we just don't know the answer. And I'm cool with that. I love that I can scratch my head and keep diving in. And I love being asked questions that make me wrestle with things and say, well, what do I believe? Where did we come from? What in the world is that about? And so I want you to say, I'm totally comfortable with having questions like that and just saying, I don't know. I think this is what's going on. But at the end of the day, there's enough evidence to believe that their kids, their sons, married some females, and I don't think all the females were their daughters. So I don't know where they came from. They were either their sisters or God created other Adam and Eves that were not mentioned in the text. And so there's your answer. Do some research on yourself. Figure it out. At the end of the day, the only reason it is important to figure out that we came from Adam is because once you get to the New Testament, it makes it clear that because we descended from Adam, we all have a sin nature. And I think that sticks no matter what. No matter what the answer of this is, if sometime archaeology finds that there was other Adam and Eves out there, no matter what it finds, the idea is that we all have descended our sin nature from Adam, the first man. And so that is why Jesus coming was so important, because Jesus is a second Adam. He's a second human, and Adam was not perfect. He made a mistake, and sin came on him and then came on all the rest of humanity. Jesus came as a second Adam, and he didn't sin. He lived a perfect life, and through him, we can have forgiveness for our sins. And so the only reason I lean back to say, you know, maybe we did come from Adam is because of that sin nature. But at the end of the day, the idea stands the same, that we have descended Adam's sin nature from Adam. And that's the best I have for that. Great question, whoever asked that question. All right, let's see what else we got next. Is sex before marriage really wrong if you are in a committed monogamous relationship? That's a great question. I would say yes, that sex outside of marriage is wrong. Now, why is it wrong? God sets the rules. God sets the standards. And I have some theories, though, on why it's wrong. And one of my theories as to why it's wrong is that sex is ultimately supposed to be the final step in a relationship, that it is the glue of a relationship. It is the final seal. And in a marriage relationship, the way that a couple knows that everything is going well with each other is because their relationship continues to lead to intimacy. And in a marriage relationship, you can always tell when something is wrong because the couple is not experiencing intimacy. And this is why when their finances are off, they end up fighting about money and then they don't have intimacy. And when one of them is working too much and they're never home, they end up fighting and it doesn't lead to intimacy. And intimacy is the final goal of marriage, to say, we're okay. We're on the same page. We can be with each other and not be ashamed. There's nothing in between us. I love you for how you are. You love me for how I am. And we're going to bond in intimacy. Having sex before marriage is doing it backwards. It is starting with what is supposed to be the final moment. And the problem with doing it first is that you don't know for sure if that relationship, even if you're in a committed relationship, what happens if you do break up? What is keeping you together? And at the end of the day, even though it's hard and even though it seems really old-fashioned, I've never, ever met a single person who said that they waited to have sex until marriage and they had a regret about it. But I've met lots of people who did not wait, and on their honeymoon, they weren't like, you know, I'm glad I didn't wait for you. I've never met anyone that said that. I've met lots of people that have said, man, I wish I would have waited. I wish I wouldn't have done that. I wish I wouldn't have fallen that way. I wish I wouldn't have had that relationship. I've never met anyone that had doubts or struggled with waiting. And at the end of the day, though, I think it's because God's order of things is that sex is supposed to be the final seal of the relationship. It is supposed to be the glue of the relationship that says, hey, we're okay. We are intimate with one another. And if you start with sex, it's doing things backwards. Your relationship should lead to intimacy and not start with the intimacy and then go from there. And so, at the end of the day, I definitely trust God's plan, and I think that, it is. Now, I will also say that God forgives sin. And so if you heard that and you're like, oh, man, I've blown it a bunch of times, I want you to know that God loves you. And just because we sin, it doesn't change God's standard or change God's perception of us. It just affects things on our level. And it's the exact same thing with kids. If you have kids, when your kids misbehave, when they break a rule that you've set, you don't love them any less. It's just there's consequences to it. And so I want you to hear that God loves you. And if that is not what you, if you haven't followed God's plan in your relationship, I would say it's not too late to start and I promise you, you will never have any regrets following God. You won't. Now, if you want to do more research on that on your own, if you want to come to a different conclusion, that's on you. But it is my understanding that sex is God's plan because it is ultimately the end deal. It is the final point that is pointing to our relationship is okay. We are committed to each other forever, and this is the seal of that relationship. Great question, whoever asked that. All right, let's see what else we got. Can women be an authority in the church? Here we go. Not just over children's ministry or other women's events, but as pastors or leaders. That's an incredible question. I love whoever asked that question. This is a question that a lot of people are asking in our culture. If this is not a question that you're familiar with or you have not been asking, this is a question that is being asked all the time. And traditionally in the church, it has been seen that it is only appropriate for men to be the pastor. And then the problem with that is that you have women who God has gifted them with the ability to teach, and it's like the church is saying, well, hey, you may have that gift to teach, but you don't have a place for it in the church. And they get that from verses in the Bible where Paul lines out the roles of the different genders in the church and what the guys are supposed to do and what the girls are supposed to do. This is a incredibly sticky topic. And there are lots of people who have opinions on it that will stand really firm and say that only men should be preaching. There is evidence in the text that says that. But there are also lots and lots of scholars who love Jesus and are Christians who are saying, no, that is wrong. And one of the reasons they say that is wrong is because in the same sections where it gives roles for women in the church, it follows it up by talking about slavery. Now, I understand these verses on slavery. If you were here for our talk on slavery, I don't have time to go into slavery and my opinions of it, but listen to our podcast on it. But there are a lot of people that hold to, how can you ignore the slavery stuff and then hold to the women and say that women can't be preachers? It's inconsistent. So I want to tell you where I've landed on this. I might change my opinion. God might convict me. God might give me new insight. But this is where I land on this. There are lots of other people that will disagree, or some people will agree. You may disagree, and I want you to know that's fine. We can still go to church together and not agree about every little thing in the Bible. But I will tell you that it's my understanding that God has placed a man as the head of the church, not because men are better, not because men are more gifted than women, but that it is supposed to be a representation of what the family is supposed to look like. And that men are supposed to lead the way in their family. Now, if you are married, you know that does not mean that you make all the decisions. My wife leads our family. She's a part of it. We are equals in our relationship. She brings different things to the table than I bring. But at the end of the day, I am held accountable for the direction that our family goes over my wife. And so if our family goes down a path and it is a path that is contrary to God, I'm the one that's held accountable for that. And so that doesn't mean that I can't trust my wife or that my wife doesn't play a huge part in our relationship. She makes so many decisions. In fact, every great man of God, is great because he has a great woman beside him. And my wife is a huge part of this church and about what we do. But at the end of the day, I feel like God has said, in order to give an example for families, a guy should be the lead pastor of the church. But this is where I kind of differ from a lot of people that are in my same group or theology. I think that if there is a head guy that God is keeping accountable, and there is verses that say that the pastor is held accountable for what happens with the church. And so if there's a head guy on it, then I am totally fine and supportive of women preaching underneath his leadership. And so at Next Level Church, I am incredibly supportive. If God brings up or raises up an incredible woman who can speak, I'm not going to silence her and say, get in there with the kids' room. You have no place on this stage. If God has given her that gifts and talents, then I'm going to say, hey, I'm trusting that God is going to allow us to work together. He's going to hold me accountable for it. We're going to work side by side, just like me and my wife work side by side, but I'm going to be held accountable for it. You're not. And so at the end of the day, I am okay with women preachers and teachers. I would just really wrestle with and have a hard time dealing with women senior pastors based off my understanding of the text that Paul gives before churches. But again, I said this is sticky because there are lots of people who are really strong believing Christians that differ from even me, that believe women have no place on the stage, and there are some that believe women should be head pastors. At the end of the day, I don't think it should be something that separates us or our friendship. I think it should be something that we can wrestle with and we can have conversations about. But I'm just letting you know this is where I stand. Where I stand, it's just my understanding that God has led men to be the head of the church, to be a role model for church and for the family, but then I'm all about having a woman preach. In fact, I asked a friend of mine to speak next time I go out of town, and I hope she can. She'll be the first one that speaks on this stage. And so I'm really excited about that. And so hopefully you are too, because it's coming. All right, let's see what else we got. What are the questions we have? Why do you hate beets so much? Well, if this is your first time at Next Level, you don't have a fat clue what that means, but I went on a mission trip with Next Level last summer, and we went to Russia. And I just want to give a quick plug. I believe that missions is something that we should do. We should do missions in our local neighborhoods. We need to get to know our neighbors and tell them about Jesus, and I think we're called to go around the world. And so last summer, we went on a mission trip to Russia, and at every single meal, they provided beets for us. Every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And they're just gag nasty. It's like eating dirt. Like, it's just not enjoyable. And so sometimes I choked it down. Other times I found something else to eat. But I joke a lot about beets because of that Russia experience where we were given beets all the time. But I at least tasted it. I will not say the same thing for lima beans. Lima beans are the spawn of Satan, and I hate them worse than beets. Let's keep going. Got another question? Maybe? Should I, as a Christian, be against the death penalty? Great question. I think that this is one of those things that you should do some heart searching and you should ask God. And I think it is totally okay for you to come to a different conclusion than someone else. This is not something that I think should ever divide the church. Now, the reason that a lot of Christians will support the death penalty is because in the Old Testament, it was established an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But Jesus then comes on the scene and he says, you've heard it said an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. I tell you, you need to forgive your enemy and you need to love your enemy and you should be praying for your enemy. So there's evidence that both supports the death penalty and evidence that says maybe that's not the best thing. Now, my understanding of the Old Testament and their ideas of the death penalty, it was set up not to be cruel or not to be this like vicious, like just barbaric system. It was set up to prevent people from sinning. And you've got to think about it. If I told you we had no rules, we had no laws, all right, we're just hanging out and there's nothing to govern us, and you get mad, what is going to prevent you from killing me? Right? You say, no, I'm a good person. I wouldn't kill you. No. If you got really mad and there were no laws, there were no consequences, we'd never heard about right or wrong, what's going to prevent you from killing me? And if I say, hey, if you kill another human, you'll just get a slap on the wrist. No biggie. Then that's not going to prevent you in your anger from killing another human being. But if I say, hey, here's the deal. I value human life so much, if you take another life, the penalty of it is your life. Now, the purpose of it is to raise awareness to say, I don't want to die. So even though I'm really angry at someone, I'm not going to kill them because the consequence is my life. So if you're here and you would say, I am a supporter of the death penalty for those that have committed a crime, I say, let your conscience lead you that way. Go for it. But if you also are here and you'd say, man, I just cannot support that, go for that. And I hope that doesn't sound wishy-washy, but I just think it's one of those things that you can find support to go with it in the Bible and you can find support to go against it. And you've got to trust your conscience. You've got to trust what you think God is leading you to and do some research on it. Don't just come up with an opinion and say, well, I don't like that, but not base it off what God is saying in the Bible. And so for me, there are strict consequences to things that we do. And I think that whatever system our government comes up with, the only problem with it is if they don't actually live it out, because then it becomes a joke. And so for the Israelites, if God said eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, but then someone murdered someone and they didn't actually take their life, then havoc would have started, because they would say, oh, it's no big deal. It's just a slap on the wrist, and mayhem would have started. And so I think that's why he established that for them. But at the end of the day, that's a tough question. So hopefully I confused every one of you. Let's keep going. Is it normal as a Christian for me to question my faith or God's existence? Let's talk about that. What is normal? There is no normal. And anyone that tells you, hey, this is my experience with God, and it should be your experience, they're a little bit off their rocker. Because God does things, and there's like no explanation for why he does it some ways with some people and does it other ways with other people. So there is no normal out there. And if you look at someone else and you say, why can't I just have a normal faith like them? Well, what does normal mean? We have a God that is living and active, and we have human beings that have free will to make decisions. And so it's going to look different for a lot of us. The question, though, is it normal for me as a Christian to question my faith of God's existence? I would say that I would guarantee you that the vast majority of people in this room that say, I am a Christian, at one point have questioned the existence of God. And specifically, it comes when life throws you a curveball. And when life is going great, it's easy to say, yeah, I'm going with God. I understand God, we're rolling. But when, like, you suffer I'm talking about a tragic loss. When you have a loved one died way before their time. When a relationship ends that was not supposed to end. When you get cancer. When you lose a job that you didn't see coming. When you suffer something in life, I think it is natural to say, God, come on. What's going on there? God, I believe that you're real and I believe that you're good, but could you throw me a bone? Could you give me an answer? Could you give me something? And I think that in times of struggling and suffering, this is why so many people have gone to the book of Psalms, because the book of Psalms is filled with questions and people wrestling with things and saying, oh my God, what is going on here? God, this doesn't feel right. My enemies are succeeding while I'm trying to live for you and I'm being punished. What's going on here? It's filled with people that are wrestling with their faith and wrestling with God. And I believe that it is those that wrestle with their faith actually end up having a stronger faith than those that just accept everything as it is. Because it's on the wrestling. When you come in on the other side and say, man, God, that was difficult, but we kept wrestling and I came on the other side and I still believe, that's when your faith starts to grow. For me, for my wife and I, we went for 6 years trying to have kids, and we're not able to have kids. And there were multiple moments during that 6 years where we were like, God, just give us something. Would you throw us an answer? Would you, like, just give us a sign, something? Like, why are you silent on this? Why do we keep going through this and suffering this pain and struggling in this way? Come on, I know you're real. Give me something. And time again, we didn't get an answer. But at the end of the day, our faith was strengthened. Why? Because faith is the evidence of things not seen. And when you can still believe, even though you haven't seen God, and even though you go through something hard, it strengthens your faith and belief in God. So I would say question away. I think that God's big enough to handle our questions. And he's big enough to handle our doubts. And I think he understands that we're humans. And he understands that we're living in a messed up world. And so if you go through a tough time, I wrestle with it. Just don't ever land on the part where you say, God does not exist. Wrestle through it and say, how do you exist in this? Ask tough questions. Meet with other Christians. And I do not think that it is abnormal or crazy weird for a Christian to question their faith in God. I think it makes you human. Let's keep going. Great question so far. Is the practice of cremation biblical? I'm not going to be the authority on this. I don't know. I don't think so, because I think the majority of our Bible comes from the Old Testament, which was the Israelite faith, the Jewish faith. And I think, I'm going to research this. Thank you for asking this question, because I don't know this answer for sure. But I think I heard years ago that in the Jewish faith, that would be something that they would have been against. They would not have supported. And I've never heard of anything that would say that it, you know, the Bible, other than that, the Bible supports it or goes against it. I think at the end of the day, I'm totally cool with cremation. It's going to save you a lot of money. Funerals are costing people thousands and thousands of dollars. And so I think it is the, I think if you choose to do that to save some money, I don't think God's going to be like, oh, you're screwed. Like, and the reason I believe this is because there are tons of times where people didn't mean to get cremated, but they were blown up or something happened to their body. And it wasn't like God was like, nah, punk, I can't do anything with you. Like, it happens. Stuff happens. And so I think at the end of the day, pray about it. Ask God for wisdom. And if that's what God leads you to do, get cremated in the name of God. Save your family some money. That's where I would land with that. Hopefully that's not too insensitive to you. Why does God punish people forever for a decision that they have to make with finite knowledge, finite understanding, and with finite time to make it? Man, that's an incredible question. Why does God punish people forever? I don't know. I don't know. The question really is asking really specifically about hell. And it's the traditional Christian belief that if you do not have a relationship with Jesus, then you go to hell. And that leads to some tough conversations and tough questions, including what about the kid in the Bunga Bunga jungle who has never heard about Jesus and he dies? What happens to him? And all of a sudden he is punished because he's never heard about Jesus. And he would be punished for eternity. And that is very hard for us Westerners to wrestle with. So why does God punish people forever? I don't know. And I'll also tell you that it would not surprise me if God was bigger than our understanding of this punishment. But I think that God has placed this punishment in there to stir something inside of us. And if there is a punishment, then the idea is that we are the ones that are to represent Jesus and tell other people about him. And we should feel something inside of us that stirs up and says, I need to tell my neighbor about this. I need to tell the orphan about this. I need to go around the world and tell someone about this Jesus. And I think we tell people about Jesus for two reasons. Not just to stop them from going to hell, but to give them heaven on earth. Because I don't know what your relationship with Jesus is like, but I'll tell you, my relationship with Jesus has totally changed my world. It has made living amazing. And so why wouldn't we want to give that to people? Why wouldn't we want to tell our neighbors and our friends and go around the world and tell other people about Jesus? It changes your life. But ultimately, I think that this is a part of the story of God because sin separates us from God. And God is bigger than our understanding. God's bigger than tough questions. And so it wouldn't surprise me to get to heaven and see God say, hey, you guys totally misread every text about hell. You totally misread everything about judgment. You guys, in your finite knowledge, came up with a bunch of stuff that was just stupid. It would not surprise me. But at the same time, it's my understanding that there is a judgment, an eternal judgment. And so because that's my understanding, that should lead me to tell people about Jesus. And it should lead you to tell people about Jesus. And so our greatest concern should not be why would God do this, but our greatest concern should be who are we telling? And I hope you don't think that's semantics or me trying to get around the question, but at the end of the day, I don't know. I don't know why God set up this system, but I do know he's God and I'm not. And it's my understanding that this is how he works. And so that's why I feel compelled to tell people about Jesus. I'll also tell you that you can believe differently than what this question asks and still go to heaven. Not believing in a literal hell is not what separates you from God. What separates you from God is not believing that Jesus died for your sin and not believing that you are a sinner and need his forgiveness. And so there are Christians, and this might be very uncomfortable for some of you, but there are Christians out there who have done great research, who have come to the end of the conclusion and said that they don't believe in an eternal hell, and they still love Jesus. I don't agree with them, but I would say they still love Jesus, and there's still a place for that in the discussion. But at the end of the day, we should be more concerned with trying to make sure that people have Jesus, not just for eternity, but for experiencing heaven on earth. And so that's where I land with that. Good question, whoever asked that. Let's keep going. What does the Bible say about sign gifts for today? What does the Bible say about sign gifts for today? Gifts of the Spirit, is that talking about like Gifts of the Spirit? Yeah, okay. What does the Bible say about sign gifts today? Well, I don't know, because the Bible doesn't really talk a lot about 2013. It gives some things, and a lot of the things were speaking to their culture directly in their time, and they're things that are still true for us, but there are some things that people have just come to different conclusions. I'll tell you the different conclusions that are out there. There are some people who believe that now that we have the Bible, there are no signs and wonders. That the reason that there were signs and wonders is because they were living in a day and age where they didn't have the Bible, where they couldn't hear God's standards on a regular basis, and they didn't know what God was thinking or God's plan. And so now that we have the Bible, there is no need for the signs and wonders, that the Bible is our signs and wonders. And there are lots of people who believe that. There are also lots of people who say those people are off their rocker because they are experiencing signs and wonders, and they're experiencing God do amazing things. My personal understanding is that a lot of us have not experienced signs and wonders that God does talk about in the Bible, and one of the reasons we haven't experienced it is because we live in America. And we are such a blessed nation that when things like headaches happen, our first thought is not, God, heal this headache, it's, where's my Tylenol? But I've been on enough mission trips, and I've talked to enough missionaries who have been in circumstances where they didn't have hospitals, and they didn't have everything that we have in America, and they were like, God, if you don't do something, this person's going to die, and God did a huge sign and wonder. I have a friend crazy story, I'll try to make it quick, but he was on a mission trip, and his last name is King, and he was in a culture that had never heard about God before. And when they heard King, they had translated it to mean that he was the King of America. And so they thought this guy was the King of America because his name is Clayton King. And they had elevated this guy to this like high like profile. And they like were saying, this guy is amazing. And the only reason that they didn't attack them is because they thought this guy was the King of America. And so he's telling them about Jesus. And the whole time he's telling them about Jesus, there's a witch doctor in the village that is casting spells on them and saying, if any of you believe in this Jesus, you will die. So there's this huge spiritual war going on, there's all this tension going on, and no one is coming to believe in Jesus because they're all afraid of this witch doctor who has been there for years. Well, one night, they come out and they wake up my friend Clayton King, they wake him up and they say, there is a mom giving birth to twins and she is dying. And there is no doctor here, and they've gone to the witch doctor who is casting all sorts of spells and doing all sorts of things, and the baby is dying, you need to come here. And Clayton is just crazy. He has more faith than I have. He inspires me every time I talk to him. But Clayton saw this situation as a way to glorify God and to make God famous. And he walked in there and he declared to everyone, he said, I'm telling you the truth. If my God lives, these babies will not die. But if my God does not live, these babies will die. I will now deliver these babies. This is a pastor, by the way. He is not a doctor. And they delivered the first baby, and the first baby was dead, and they prayed over it, and it came to life. And they delivered the second baby, and it lived. And he prayed over the mom, and the mom lived. And the whole village then cast the witch doctor out, and they became a Christian village. It's an incredible story. And I've heard enough people that have experienced things like that to say, you know what, I think that there are still signs and wonders. But I also think that I don't experience them enough because I live in an incredibly blessed nation where I go get Tylenol instead of begging God to take away my headache. Let's keep going. What else we got? Does God predestine some people to go to heaven and others to go to hell? Yes. No. I don't know. Paul, if you've ever read through Romans, Paul makes a case that says, who are you to question God? And if God has made some people destined to hell, he's God and you're not. So, did God predestine some people to go to hell? Well, there's one verse that supports a lot of people to understand that verse. There are also lots of other verses that say, no. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, and whosoever believes in him, that we have a free will to believe in him. Now, I'll tell you where I land. The reason I struggle with predestination and whether or not some people are predestined to go to hell is because of free will. And you can disagree with me on this, but this is my understanding of free will. I don't want to do this by any means, but I have the free will to do whatever I want to do. And so if I wanted to walk up and punch Trey in the face without him seeing coming, because he's in the military and he could probably hurt me, if I just walked up and I punched him in the face as hard as I could, I would have the free will to do that. And I don't think that's because God was up in heaven leading my fist to meet with Trey's face. I don't think I'm predestined. I don't think God is saying, this is going to happen. You don't have a choice in it. You leaned into me. Everyone saw it. He leaned into me. Right? We have a free will. And the reason I believe that is because at the end of the day, I don't think it's God's plan. I don't think we are predestined to sin. Does it surprise God when we sin? No, he saw it coming. He knew it was going to happen. God's still in control, even though we sin. But we have, and I think you've experienced this, even on your best days when you really want to love God, aren't you still tempted? And don't you then have the freedom to say, I'm going to either reject this temptation or I'm going to go for it? And so because of that understanding, I believe that God creates all of us with a chance, with the freedom to accept or reject God. But you need to know that I'm not the authority on this, and there are lots of people who would say, no, 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 you are predestined. And I'm friends with some predestined people, and so I just punch them in the face and say, don't hit me back, I was predestined to punch you in the face. No, I'm just joking, I've never hit anyone, I'm not a violent person, I'm just trying to lighten the mood. So that's my understanding of it. I think at the end of the day, we have a free will, and if we have a free will, that means that we can accept or reject God. But there are lots of people that disagree with me on that, and we're still friends. So hopefully we can still be friends afterwards. All right, let's do one more question, then we're done for the night. Is having a social alcoholic drink with friends a sin? So many of these questions are yes and no. We love things to be black and white, and it would make our world be a lot easier if it was black or white. This is not a yes or no question. Here's the problem with having just yes or no stamps on things. It destroys your ability to think. And God has given us standards, and he's told us what sin is, but he's also given us a brain to analyze things. And so is having an alcoholic beverage, if you are over the age of 21, if a 13-year-old asks this question, then yes, it's wrong for you. But if a 21-year-old wants to have an alcoholic beverage with a friend who can also have an alcoholic beverage, and it doesn't lead them to get drunk, which the Bible talks about not getting drunk. You can have alcoholic beverage. Have it in good conscience. But the reason it's not just a black or white question is because Paul tells us that we should care about the weaker brother. And there are some people who would look at that and look at your decision and your freedom to have a drink, and they would struggle with it. And as Christians, it's not just about finding a loophole in the text so we can support whatever behaviors we want to support. It is about loving God with all our heart and loving our neighbor like we love ourselves. And so if there are those out there who struggle with alcohol or who would even say, I don't understand how you could serve God and drink alcohol, then our decision should be around them. I'm not going to have alcohol. And even though I would be free to do it, if I drank in front of someone that caused them to struggle or to sin, that is sin. And so that's why this is a great question, but it's not a clear yes or no. There are some instances where you could have an alcoholic beverage and it would not be sin if you're over 21 years old. But there are also a lot of instances where the fact that you chose to drink is leading someone else to stumble, and that would be sin. And so I say pray about it, find out where you land on it, and make wise choices for God. Whatever you do, whether you drink or eat, do it all for the glory of God. And so if you're here today and you have a conviction not to drink alcohol, do that for the glory of God. If you have a conviction that you can have a drink every once in a while with your friend, do that for the glory of God. If it doesn't separate your conscience, then I think Paul would say, in my understanding, Paul would say, hey, do it as long as it's for the glory of God. As long as it's not leading you to get drunk or to cause someone else to stumble, then you could have the freedom in it. Now, me personally, I've never tasted alcohol. So I say this based off of my friends that do drink. And I think that they drink in good conscience, and I don't judge them for that because they are making their own decisions, and I think that there's enough support in the Bible to say, hey, you know, it is okay if you want to have a drink as long as it does not cause your brother to stumble or lead you to stumble. And if one drink leads you to get drunk, it is sin for you to drink alcohol. I hope I answered your questions. I hope you can see that it's not easy. There are no black and white for a lot of these questions, and I wish there were. And I hope that it didn't confuse any of you. Really, at the end of the day, though, what I hope that it does is I hope that it leads you to get into the Bible to figure out what do you believe? What do you believe about God? What do you believe about His laws and His commands? Who is this God that you would say that you're serving? And come up with some understanding. Continue to ask tough questions. And at the end of the day, just say to yourself, I'm not trying to make all the rules. I'm not trying to live my life to please myself. I'm trying to please God. And so if that means I have to change some of my opinions to honor God, I'll change some of my opinions. And if that means that I have to wrestle with things that I thought were concrete, I'm going to wrestle with things. Because at the end of the day, we're not trying to be right. We're trying to find Jesus. And so I hope that this has been beneficial to you. I hope this hasn't brought any drama into your life or any controversy. I hope it stirred you to pursue Jesus more, because I think He changes everything. And I think He's worth pursuing with all our hearts and all our lives. Will you pray with me? God, thanks for this day. Thank you for these incredible questions, God. I love it. This was amazing, the questions that were asked. And God, I hope that you were honored by the answers. I hope that at the end of the day, you would just stir hearts to continue to seek you. God, help us never to be a people that feels like we're so right that we miss you. And help us to be a people that continues to search and that continues to ask for wisdom and continues to ask questions and continues to just wrestle with our faith so that we can find you. God, I ask ultimately that we would just be changed, that we would be a church that is not just about what we believe, but we would be a church that takes what we believe and puts it into action, and that we would change the world in your name. I ask, God, that you would do more than we could ask or imagine through this body of believers, that we would leave from here feeling closer to you, that we would leave from here seeking you. God, I ask that you would do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine. Thank you for moving. Thank you for giving us great questions and a great time tonight. In Jesus' name. Amen.